Welcome to Manager Tools. This week, Behavioral Effectiveness and MT Disc, Example 1, Part 1. The questions this cast answers are, how can I be more effective in relationships? What can I change in my behavior at work in order to get ahead? And what can I do to help others like me? If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. We're so excited that our public conferences, that is our EMC, ECC, and EHM, which you can attend in person, now come with PDU certification. We've worked with the Project Management Institute to certify our events so that you can get credits towards your project management certifications. And we're excited that if you come to an event, this will count for both. If you want more information, please come to the website, manager-tools.com. You can sign up for an in-person event and you get two birds with one stone. You get that learning as well as some credits towards your PMI. We have focused for years on relationships and we're back again with more helpful tips.
You bet.
About relationships. We're going to help everybody understand how they can improve their relationships. And some of this may be pretty familiar with y'all. For y'all, we talked about DISC in the past as well. The common wisdom is that remembering people's names is kind of the key to relationships. And while that might be a part of it, it's not really like the key to relationships.
Yeah, it's
the
key to.
Yeah, it's a great introduction situation to remember someone's name. It's not true, though, that that will maintain a relationship.
Yeah, with all the people every single time.
Relationships are hard. The reason we hear so much about it, remembering people's names, is that half the people in the world, high T's and high C's in MT DISC language, aren't good with names. And so half the world is good and gets credit, and the other half isn't good and they don't get credit because they don't deserve it because they're not good at it. And okay, good. Remembering people's names, nothing wrong with it. Continue to do it. However, we find this pretty common in career and management guidance that people are giving you guidance to address your fears and concerns and maybe shore up some weaknesses. Sure, it sometimes has that same effect. That doesn't, though, address the effective behaviors. So it's great to remember someone's name. It doesn't mean that that's going to get you the full way. The key to great relationships is learning that communication is what the listener does.
Absolutely. That's exactly it, Kate. That's exactly it. All right. So in our casts, which are going to take the next couple of weeks, we're going to go over, first of all, communication being what the listener does. And then we're going to go over the original classic scenario, followed by the effective behaviors. Starting this week's cast with communication is what the listener does. Now, well, we'd love to, because it sounds really good. And it means you're really smart if you come up with it. We did not invent it. We can't take full credit for communication is what the listener does. We did make up the phrase, but it's directly derived from Peter Drucker's classic Management. In chapter 30, he's talking about managerial communications. The line that caused this epiphany on our end was, talking assumes, in other words, that the emitter communicates. So, essentially, translation, Drucker's point is that if the listener isn't listening, communication doesn't occur. The purpose of communication is to transfer an idea in the mind of a speaker as accurately as is possible to the mind of the person that's listening. But as we've all seen, because we've all been on the planet Earth for more than 2 days, this process is fraught with challenges.
If you're thinking, y'all, about trees and forests and the sound they're supposed to make when they fall, it's not a comparison we haven't made in the past. So you might be thinking, oh my gosh, tree, forest, all that stuff. And I always imagined myself when we talk about this, if you're walking by yourself in the woods, maybe, be careful about falling trees, and you're talking, you're not communicating, unless you're communicating to yourself. Is yourself listening? Okay, good. There's no one there to listen, and therefore the act of communication, imparting an idea to another, is not occurring. Now, you may be refining your ideas. That's one thing.
That's one thing. Again, it's not communication.
It's not communication. There's nobody else there. If nobody's listening, then the act of transferring ideas from your head to somebody else's is not occurring. And I would suggest, and we're going to get into this, that just because you're talking does not mean that someone is listening.
Even if there's another person there.
100%. The trees are just as good listeners as some humans, mm-hmm. in my opinion, based on the, oh gosh, I said something the other day and the person I was in the same room as fully did not hear it. And then 3 minutes later asked me a question about the thing that I had posited. And I remember thinking, okay, good. So just, and I, actually what I remember, the end of that, the real sentence there is what I remember thinking is some people actually like to listen to me. It's interesting that other people's aren't listening.
Right? Ouch.
If you host a podcast and the other people in your life don't listen to you.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I guess it leads to what I should say, which is do not assume that proximity necessitates them listening.
Right.
Perhaps not. Just because they're in the same room as you.
Exactly.
Doesn't mean they're necessarily listening. Okay. So this process, communication of taking an idea and moving it from your mind to somebody else's is fraught with challenges, you mm-hmm. mentioned. First of all, the idea or thought that you have in your mind is not in word form.
Right.
Brains, they don't store words.
Yeah, we're not seeing sentences. Close your eyes and think of an idea. You're not seeing a string of words running through your mind's eye. That is communication, to Kate's point, is so much more than that. We've got in our mind a mental picture, right? We've got a story. We've got, we'll call it a movie playing in our mm-hmm. brain. So from our perspective, if we're going to communicate to the other person what we're thinking, which again, isn't a sentence, it's a picture, we first have to decide which words to say, which, let's be clear, words are imperfect. As soon as you have to choose words to explain something that you can see occurring, it is degrading the message. Then, what comes out of our mouths, that is inherently flawed because we had to try and translate this mental picture into a set of words. Then, to go a step further, those words have to reach the listener's ears. And let's face it. Yeah, exactly. Let's face it. I mean, Kate just gave us an example a minute ago. Thanks to distractions, different priorities, different stressors, multitasking, ambient noise, language differences, vocabulary differences, cell phone alerts, interruptions, all of the things that are also occurring at the same time you're saying your message to another person, which you're hoping they receive, the words that the speaker uses are often not perfectly received.
Which is super generous. Often not.
Oh, yeah.
Cynically, I think it's pretty rare. And even... Oh man, just the whole thing about like the way you would describe it versus the way they hear it, right? So,
oh yeah.
You say some stuff and first you had a picture and you made it words and then you say these words and then the listener takes this idea which has already suffered two degradations essentially, right? Like it's already 2 degrees removed and maybe even more from
the original picture in my mind.
Right?
Yeah.
They have to then put it into their own brain.
Mm-hmm.
And process it into an image, a movie.
Translate it.
And they, if they're listening, do this effortlessly.
Uh-huh.
And I'll come back for in a second to the truly listening thing. And the listening part of this communication then is already done.
Yeah.
This is then pure processing of someone's idea, which again, 2 steps removed from what you originally had in your mind by the listener who, by definition, has a different way of intaking the information and then also creating an image.
Right.
So you say blue and you're picturing sky blue and I prefer cerulean.
Yeah.
So we end up with something different. And that's like on the, I said, oh, that's like on the small end. I was in a conference, I was talking to a group and I said, we're talking about feedback. And I said, you have to ask them to listen to you because you don't know if they're listening. And somebody said, well, of course they're listening. And I said, think of all the different topics that a person could be thinking about. Like, just imagine for yourself a list of topics somebody could be thinking about. They could be thinking right now, there's somebody in the world thinking about frogs.
Yeah.
They could be thinking about frogs. They could be thinking about cookies. They could be thinking about catalytic converters. I mean, just the list is so long that the idea yeah. that they're focused, it's just kind of ridiculous because there's just so many options.
Why would they be? Why would they be?
They could be thinking about frogs. And that's they could so be
thinking about frogs. Exactly. So,
and then, okay, so you're talking about frogs. They're thinking about frogs. Good. And then that intake and processing that they do, it's degrading your idea again because backgrounds differ, role power intervenes, time and attention pressures add further to their inability to process. Like, they don't have the time to sit there and imagine fully the picture you have in your mind. Either they don't have that time, or they weren't listening because of frogs, or they have never seen
right.
this thing, especially if it's like a new idea.
Right?
I watched the Tetris movie last night.
Oh my gosh, I didn't even know there was a Tetris movie.
It would perhaps lead people to believe that that movie would not be any good. It is fantastic. And what's they're showing the genesis of, essentially, genesis is a bad word given the other things involved in the movie, the Game Boy. Imagine trying to describe to someone a Game Boy, like, and you've never seen it before, right? Like, that's like when something's, or an iPhone, for example, like these inventions, these ideas yeah. that are brand new. Sure, you could draw it, but the minutia that goes into something like that is, of course, maybe you're a big picture person, so you're not saying all those things, but it's really hard to take an idea and move it from someone's brain, especially if it's a new idea,
like right?
Something new and cool and exciting.
Oh my gosh, so hard. All the word choices, all the distractions. There's so much going on. And at the end of the day, in our communications, the truly important part of the entire exchange has nothing to do with what the speaker says. The truly important part of all of this communication that's wrought with difficulty and room for error isn't what the speaker says, rather what the listener does in turning the words that they're hearing into an actual meaning. Going back to what we said at the very beginning, if you're talking to yourself in the forest and there are no other people, you're talking, but you're not communicating.
Mm-hmm.
And the last process, that is the part where the person is hearing the information and turning that into something usable, that's where the actual communication happens. And too few of us, when we are having conversations, when we are trying to communicate something to another person, the part that we're worried about, the part that we're thinking about, the part that we're prepared about is the speaking part, the emission part, the writing part. We're thinking about how we transmit the message rather than about how the message is being received.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this is all about. Now, we hope that there are some longtime followers of Manager Tools Guidance tuned into the podcast today. And those of you can see the critical role that trust plays in these communication exchanges. Going back to all the things that Kate said, I mean, it's imperfect. There's a list of imperfect variables occurring in this communication scenario, which means when trust exists, even if the message is garbled, it's not straightforward, it's crooked, it's imperfect, it's not great, the path to the listener's mind is much clearer. Listeners are far more likely, when hearing a message delivered to them from someone whom they trust, to try and understand what the deliverer meant in their communication.
Yeah, so if you're the manager, you want there to be trust because then you hope that that person will try then to get on the same page as you.
Right.
They're more likely to want to do so. I keep bringing up these... It's going to sound a lot like I'm obsessed with television and movies today. I don't, you know, just because this is where my brain's at. We've been talking recently, my husband and I have been talking about when you try to convince somebody else to watch a TV show that you like. And
yeah.
I've decided that the majority of television shows are very, very, very hard to describe in a way that's convincing for anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Try it. Like, go talk to somebody about Game of Thrones. Go talk to somebody about The Last of Us. Go talk to somebody about Yellowstone, right? And I think that's a really good example, though, of what I believe to be true. The only reason someone watches a television show is because they have a trusting relationship with the person who recommended it. Not because they like the synopsis, right? Not because they love dragons. By the way, there's not enough dragons in any of those shows. Not because they love apocalyptic things. It's because they trust the person who told them. And they think, well, oh, okay. This person wouldn't have told me a show about dragons if they didn't think I would like it.
Right.
And if we're talking about management, if you're doing one-on-ones, if you have a trusting relationship, then it's more likely that the person will believe what you're saying and therefore then also try to get the same picture in their head.
Mm-hmm.
So trust is super key here. Without trust, absolutely, communication is a pipe dream.
Oh, absolutely.
William White said, the great enemy of communication we find is the illusion of it.
Mm-hmm.
You think you're telling your direct something. You think you're telling your team something. You think you're telling your coworker something. And they are straight up not listening, or
right?
They're listening and they don't have the same picture in their head as you.
At all.
They're also thinking about so many different things in the context of it, right? Like
right. What
you think of around the context of a topic or a project or an initiative is based on your role and your essentially position in the org chart. What they think of has so many other threads coming out of it. And so this idea, I've told them, so they get it. I would suggest that a vast majority of the problems that managers have are purely that we thought the message we gave was clear.
Yeah.
And that it wasn't. Not, you know, not via malice, not via lack of smarts, not via lack of expertise.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing other than I said A and they heard oranges.
Yeah. That's absolutely it.
Yes, it's so important.
It's so important. And all that to say, we're not suggesting that as the communicator, you don't need to be scrupulous with your words.
Oh, you should.
Absolutely. As professionals, we're obligated to be careful and be accurate and even precise if the situation calls for it, and to reduce most of the misunderstandings that can occur from our communications. But this is all to say, we're just not going to get really far if we don't also consider how our audience will receive our communications when we communicate them. Because no matter how precise, they can be misinterpreted in many cases. And this challenge can create problems for the less experienced professionals who come to the workplace learning about the importance of things like authenticity. Now, just a small segue, we take authenticity here to mean being oneself in the workplace. We fully acknowledge that there are numerous definitions of authenticity, and many of those definitions being wildly different. However, the dictionary says authenticity to mean being true to one's own personality, character, or spirit. So, if a professional then proceeds from a place of authenticity versus professionalism, they run the risk of insisting on being themselves. That is, doing what they naturally do, right? Being them outside, them inside the box, right? Just who they are, speaking the way they naturally do, writing the way that makes sense to their brain, doing things the way they want them done. All of this comes at the expense of effective communication.
And we should say, it's not always at the expense. There is a portion of the world that might communicate similarly to you.
Yeah.
And so in those cases, you won't suffer from using your own style.
It's about a quarter of the population has your same style.
So 75% of the time,
mm-hmm,
we need to be more careful about the way we communicate, because the person intaking what we're saying is not someone who uses our style. We have a really helpful, I wouldn't say it's cultural here. It happens a lot, though, in meetings at Manager Tools, where someone will say something and the other person, the person who's supposed to be listening, will say, can I say back to you what I think you just said so that I can make sure I have it correctly. And y'all, I mean, when I'm in these meetings, I'm watching for does what the first person said and what the second person said match with what I said, what I think is happening? And do, you know, does one and two both match and equal three?
Yeah.
Further though, it is, if you aren't invested in the conversations and their outcomes, you could see it as a super fun game of telephone.
Oh, yeah.
Because sometimes, and we even have, we have a meeting. It's on Friday mornings where someone will say XYZ and the next person will say, let me say that back to you. And the person who says it often says negative.
No.
Here's what I meant.
Yeah, and that's not what I wouldn't have said that. No.
It's so helpful. It's a confirmation we're on the same page. It has, I think, saved us a lot of churn around things happening outside those meetings that would cause us to go in the wrong direction from what the team agrees would be useful. It's just a really helpful technique. And it kind of came about, I think, because some of our executive level team has done it in the past. And so it kind of stuck. Although I don't know that we consciously taught it to anyone.
I don't think we have. It just becomes habit. Because when you do that, when you make it a habit of saying, just, I'm going to say back what I think I heard you say, just for clarity. It helps both parties. It helps mm-hmm. the person understanding be more aware of what was actually said, but it also helps the communicator understand for future when transmitting or communicating that same idea, oh, wait a minute, this can be interpreted multiple different ways. I got to be a little bit more careful about how I say stuff because it can be misinterpreted.
Yeah. It's helped us in a lot of technical conversations to eliminate assumptions.
Oh, yeah.
And to highlight extra use cases. If you're listening and you're in a technical space, having that reciprocation in those conversations in a technical format has really helped us to highlight, oh, gosh, I didn't even think about that use case. Or, oh, right, that assumption is inherent in what I said, when in fact I didn't mean for us to proceed based on that particular assumption. So that's really something that we've found helpful that other people might also find helpful. And especially, I think it also helps increase the strength of relationships because it is a very, I want to understand what you said. And I know my responsibility as the person receiving the message. And I would not proceed under an assumption without your agreement that I heard what you said, which mm-hmm. is just, that's a kindness, really, when you boil it down.
I agree. And I was going to say, Kate, I also find it helps us be more creative.
Yeah.
It helps us be more creative. Instead of the listener taking a passive role and simply intaking information that they may not have complete clarity on, mm-hmm. seeking clarity creates a situation where both parties can be more creative about next steps. Well, if that's true, then this is also true, right? It helps you be more creative, talk through ideas, get a better understanding, be more helpful, beneficial, useful together in the communication.
Absolutely.
We're hoping that many of our listeners here today are currently Manager Tools personal licensees. And if you're not a personal licensee, we would encourage you to become one. The podcast you're listening to today, if you'd rather not listen to it in the future, you'd rather read it in a short white paper so that you can enact the guidance readily and easily and even potentially pass it on to some of the folks on your team, you'll want to become a personal licensee. On our website, manager-tools.com/products/personal-license, you can find this information and more, all of the benefits that a Manager Tools personal licensee has access to.
We want to talk about now the original classic scenario. And we've talked about this. We've illustrated the challenge of effective communication a lot of times with this simple scenario. And to make it slightly less complicated without role power implications, we're going to make our scenario occur this time between two peers.
Okay.
Samuel and Dakota.
Yes. Okay. So first, Dakota. Dakota's a high D. As a high D, she's task-oriented, assertive, direct, no nonsense, sometimes a little bit brusque. She interrupts. She talks fast and sometimes loud. usually about work, deliverables, and goals. She doesn't like chit-chat, and she already has enough friends. She doesn't need any more. She makes big gestures and makes statements rather than asking questions. In meetings, she routinely speaks up. She's not known for being warm or personable. She's proud that she gets her job done through persistence and discipline and hard work. Her friends might say that her drive and forcefulness make her an ideal candidate for the CEO role or a general in the army.
Our second professional is Samuel. He's a high S, relationship-oriented, reserved. He's kind and warm-hearted. He is the person on their team whom everybody likes and frankly loves. He smiles at everyone. He knows everyone's names. He's been invited to everyone's home. He remembers spouses and children's and pets' names. His speaking style is more slow. He often describes things in terms of how he and others feel about those things. He may not speak at all during a meeting, preferring to listen during that meeting very well. He loves chatting. He loves getting to know other people. He doesn't interrupt and stops talking when others interrupt him. He likes following processes and thinks change should be done slowly to make sure everyone's along for the ride and doing well. He is every bit as smart and hardworking as Dakota.
Yes. Okay. So these are our characters. And in our scenario, Dakota and Samuel are peers, both well-regarded by their manager, Michaela. So in our first episode, Dakota needs some work product from Samuel, which is past due. Now, for the record, this scenario is based on a series of actual interactions between two professional peers with similar MT disc profiles to Dakota and Samuel. So based upon real events.
The stage is set.
Stage is set. Exactly. So let's see how each fares when left to their own instincts. First off, we got Dakota. Looks at her watch. It's 2:30. And she needs the quarterly sales report from Samuel. He owed them to her at 2 p.m., 30 minutes ago. And she was being generous with that deadline when she initially said it. So now we're in a position where she must have them. So she walks over to Samuel's desk. Samuel looks up slightly. And Dakota says, I need the sales reports.
Samuel smiles, says, hi, Dakota, how are you? Please have a seat.
And Dakota says, standing, I'm fine, thanks, but I'd be better if you'd gotten the sales numbers to me when we agreed. Do you have them?
Samuel grimaces and smiles at the same time, which is really hard to do. Says, Dakota, I'm sorry, but I don't. I regret that I missed the deadline.
Dakota crosses her arms, not completely concealing her frustration. Thanks, but when will you have them to me?
Samuel pauses, again apologizes. You're right. I'm sorry. I can have them to you by 4 p.m. I need to do a couple of other things for Michaela, but that shouldn't take too long.
Dakota quickly realizes that'll make the sales figures 2 hours overdue. Look, this is the standard weekly process. There's a series of steps. This week's no different. And I owe them to the boss first thing in the morning, as always. If you get them to me by 4 o'clock, you're basically saying, I have to stay late tonight because of your delay. Not cool.
After a pause, Samuel responds with, because he's just beginning to sense hostility from Dakota. You're right. And again, I'm sorry. I'll do my best to prioritize it. And if it will help, I will send Michaela a note saying I got them to you late.
And Dakota says, you do that, and walks back to her desk, unsatisfied and frustrated at Samuel. Samuel watches her walk away, worried now that she's mad at him.
How do we, if we're listening to this, how do y'all think that went for the people involved? Can we see where both parties stayed in their own lane, but the outcome wasn't ideal? Do we think their relationship is affected based on this exchange, that it's going to be good or bad? I mean, okay, I don't think that went well. I think
I don't either.
She to him.
Neither party got what they wanted.
There's that.
I know that for sure.
And I think she's frustrated with him and he feels badly about what happened. And they both didn't get what they want. So now we have work not getting done, and two people having a negative emotional response to the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably sets a stage for future relationship tensions.
Tensions. Next time, there's even more tension. Next time there's that, I want to say that fear kind of response, like that almost like that feeling that you have in your chest of, oh my gosh, this person's talking to me. Last time it didn't go good. Those concerns.
Yeah. It's awkward. You have an emotional response. You have an emotional memory. And so it colors the next interaction, which, okay, second episode. Scenario reversed. Samuel needs work from Dakota, which is also past due.
Mm-hmm.
I'll play Samuel again. Fun. I look up from my work, realizing we need the sales reports from Dakota. She does them every week. She's supposed to give them to Samuel by 2 p.m. and it's 2:30. So Samuel goes to Dakota's desk. She's focused on her laptop screen, doesn't seem to notice him. He stands quietly waiting, not wanting to interrupt. And she continues to work. Hi, Dakota. I'm sorry for interrupting. Do you have a minute?
And Dakota, continuing to look at her screen, not looking toward him at all, says, I'm super busy. What do you need?
Samuel says, may I sit? Which Dakota's response to that is to motion to the chair, still looking at the screen.
Mm-hmm.
Samuel says, like I said, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we had discussed you getting me the sales figures by 2 o'clock. I know you're super busy, and it would really help me out if I could get them as soon as possible.
And Dakota sighs and finally looks away from her laptop for the very first time. You're right. I didn't get them to you. As I said, I'm super busy. I don't know when I can get them to you.
Samuel smiles. I understand. But maybe you could give me a rough idea. Just a rough idea. I'm worried we won't be able to get them to Michaela on time.
And Dakota stares at him for a minute. Fair enough. If you're going to bring the boss into this, I can have them to you by 9:15 tomorrow morning.
Well, okay. If there's anything I can do to help, I will. I'll try to move some stuff I was going to do tomorrow to this afternoon. Sorry you're so busy, and thanks.
And Dakota goes back to work. And Samuel walks away, worried that Dakota is mad at him, even though he tried to be super nice about the delay. And again, same questions Kate asked last time. How do we think that went for both parties? Can you see where both parties communicated in a way that worked for themselves, but fully didn't pay attention to at all how the listener perceived or heard the words that they were saying, the communication they were intending to have? Did either party get what they wanted? Did anyone succeed? No. Everyone failed. And how do we think future? How do we think their relationship was affected based on this exchange?
Not so good.
Not so good.
That's it for this week, folks. Join us next week for a continuation of this topic.